This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Renee Montaigne.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. It's not often that an employee of the Central Intelligence Agency gets so much attention for criticizing his own government. A CIA analyst known as Mike did just that. He authored a book called Imperial Hubris: Why the West is Losing the War on Terror. He spoke on this program a few weeks ago, but his charges are too detailed and too serious to handle in a single conversation. So we called him again. Mike took a two-hour leave and left the CIA headquarters in Virginia. When he arrived here in Washington, he could give only his first name as he was introduced to people. Mike says the U.S. fought an unnecessary war in Iraq, and he says the U.S. misunderstood the situation in Afghanistan.
The intelligence community as a whole at the senior levels has a contempt for expertise. They're mostly generalists at the senior levels. They haven't had a lot of experience on any one topic. And as far as I could tell from sitting directly in the middle of the events, there was no effort to gather the substantial amount of knowledge the United States government possesses on Afghanistan. And so we went into the war in Afghanistan kind of on a wing and a prayer and a hope that everything would turn out.
Well, now, in Afghanistan, the United States went in with a bombing campaign with some special forces. The Taliban was thrown out quickly, relatively light U.S. casualties. Why shouldn't we think that Afghanistan is going to work out over time?
We seem to have a lot of trouble distinguishing between winning a battle and winning a war. We won a battle. We drove the Taliban from the cities. And the Taliban is a rural-based organization, so in many ways, driving them out of the cities, while they didn't want to leave the cities, it helped them. They reverted, in a sense, to their natural state as insurgents. Same thing with Al-Qaeda. So we let the overwhelming mass of fighters with guns go home to their villages and become invisible. And now we're faced with the resurgence of an organization, of two organizations, the Taliban and Al-Qaeda, which were defeated in a battle, but have hardly lost the war.
I can hear in my head the voice of Donald Rumsfeld, or another forceful advocate of administration policy, ticking off things that, from the administration's point of view, are going right in Afghanistan. We've gotten rid of the Taliban, he could say. There's a new government. There's Hamid Karzai, who's an ally of the United States. People are moving toward elections. If you were going to summarize the situation in Afghanistan with a few bullet points, what would yours be?
That I hope Mr. Karzai gets out alive, that unless we are willing to greatly expand the presence of U.S. and NATO military forces and are willing to take the war to the insurgents, we will eventually come down to the choice of evacuation as the only possible remedy. You know, Afghanistan is a place where tribal loyalties, clan loyalties, family loyalties are paramount. And I really think you could have 15 or 20 elections, and it's basically meaningless because unless the tribes are satisfied, struggle for power will go on.
You write not that there could be, but that there will be an Islamist regime in charge in Kabul, Afghanistan.
Yes.
Isn't it possible that a country can change?
Absolutely. They're changing greatly, but the idea that you're going to put 800 years of Anglo-American history on a CD-ROM and give it to Mr. Karzai to install in Afghanistan in a year is really quite madness.
Now, in this book, which we're discussing for the second time, you not only say the United States misunderstood Afghanistan and that the United States misunderstood Iraq, you also say that the United States fundamentally misunderstood the motivations of Al-Qaeda. How so?
What we've misunderstood is bin Laden's genius on focusing on American policies. We continue to describe him as a gentleman and a movement that's out to deny us our freedoms, our liberties, our voting system, our society.
The standard administration line is they hate freedom.
Yes, and it has been since 1992 or 1988. Take your pick. It's a blindness which is bipartisan in nature. They don't like our society, clearly. They don't like women going to school, and they don't like unveiled women, and all of those things are true. But very few people in the Islamic world are going to die for that kind of amorphous goal of making sure Americans won't drink Budweiser or something along that line.
You, just to summarize this, I mean, you say that Al-Qaeda is unhappy with the United States and gets support in the Islamic world, not because of what the United States stands for, but because of what the United States does.
That's exactly right. And I think the United States is al-Qaeda's only indispensable ally. As long as we pursue the policies that bin Laden has focused on, we will be an admirable, in fact, a perfect foil for his activities. For example, he really has a very limited number of complaints, but they're very important in terms of the Muslim world. Our unqualified support for Israel, our ability to keep oil prices at levels acceptable to the Western consumer, our support for countries that oppress Muslims. He's focused on all those things, and they all appeal to Muslims across the theological spectrum of Islam.
Well, so what do you do differently? You don't want to just give in and do what they want.
Of course not. It's got to be a combination of things. But right now, because we have not recognized that our policies have a role in bin Laden's war aims, but more importantly, in his ability to attract support, his room to grow is immense as long as those policies stay in place. No one is listening to us in the Muslim world when we protest that our policies are for the good of Muslims or for the good of the world generally. And we have left ourselves only with the military option. I've been criticized in some of the reviews of the book for saying that we needed to apply the military arm of the United States with more force. I clearly believe we have to increase the use of the military, but not because it's either admirable or desirable or just nice to do, but because we have no other option.
It sounds like you're saying using force has worked out terribly for the United States so far in Iraq and Afghanistan, but it's time to use even more force.
No, I think what I'm saying is that force is our only option, and we have used it so far in a very dainty manner. For example, the al-Qaeda problem exists today. The bin Laden problem exists today because we were unwilling to commit our own soldiers to do the dirty work, to go into the Tora Bora Mountains
in Afghanistan
and take care of the rest of bin Laden. In Iraq, we put on a brilliant military show of speed and the use of air power, but 400,000 Iraqis went home with their guns. We didn't close the borders, and now there's foreign fighters flowing in from everywhere. And it's not the fault of the soldier on the ground or the commander on the ground. It's, I think, the fault of the generals who should have said, historically speaking, wars cause casualties. And if you don't fight a war to a conclusion, you end up fighting it again and again.
If bin Laden was killed, would that make an immediate difference in the problem?
It would have made a big difference 3 years ago. It will make a difference to al-Qaeda as an organization right now because al-Qaeda is absolutely unique because of the multiple nationalities involved in the group, the multiple ethnic groups, the multiple linguistic groups. Bin Laden, as far as we know, is an absolutely unique individual. He has the right credentials in terms of fighting. He is a pious, devout Muslim, and he's respected for that. He's a billionaire who's lived the life of a peasant. The problem for us, for the United States, is what's happened in the past 3 years is, A, he survived, and he's basically showed the Muslim people around the world that he can defy the United States, take their best shot, and still have our leaders telling the Congress that al-Qaeda is possibly going to explode a weapon of mass destruction in the United States.
We've been talking to the author of Imperial Hubris, Why the West is Losing the War on Terror. He is a CIA analyst, and he's asked us to refer to him only as Mike. Thanks very much for coming by.
Pleasure, sir.